Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stephanie Kniep, Head of Investor Relations, and I welcome you to Lenzing's today conference call regarding our Q2 2013 results. The conference will be held by Lenzing's board members, Peter Untersberger, Fritz Wenninger, and Thomas Winkler. After the presentation, as you heard, you can ask us questions, and so I would like to give the word to Mr. Untersberger. Please go ahead, Mr. Untersberger.
Yes, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Hi, guys. Welcome to today's conference call regarding Q2 2013 results. As always, I am joined by Thomas and Fritz, and I'm sure that you have the presentation in front of you. May I start with slide three? The key highlights for Q2. I think most important, not only for us, but also for investors, is that we delivered on Q2. On record volume of 220,000 tons, 0.5% above the guidance of  221, and quite, I would say, respectable EBITDA of 70.4 million euro against the guidance of 65-70. The average fiber price was almost on Q1 level, with 175 against 177. I admit that's 1% below. We have some explanations later on. The average fiber price underlines, of course, the somewhat poor pricing environment. No doubt, we are in a poor pricing environment. But, and that's very important, our excellence program, which Thomas will elaborate much more on, continues to offset, I would say, most of this negative price effect. The second highlight was the very successfully completed sale of, let's say, the business unit plastics. Of course, the target was to sell 100%. At the end of the day, we made a repurchase of 15%, but as we told you in May, that we are targeting a valuation and an enterprise value of 8x EBITDA, we achieved that. The 100% equity value was 69 million, and the net cash in into Lenzing was 62 million euro. Well, most of you know that we also celebrated the 75th anniversary, which is just reflecting a long period of success of innovation and sustainability. I move on to slide four. I would say we are in a difficult environment, and I think that's not a surprise for you. We are there in this environment since, let's say, 12 months. We did have, or we did not see, strong catalysts in Q1 and Q2 in Europe and in Asia, particularly in China or in India, which would lead us to the assumption that things would change in the second half. When we say that we have quite distorted supply-demand dynamics, then that has to do primarily with cotton, which I will elaborate later on. What is still for sure is that the world market, the world fiber market, continues to grow. So beside the strong, beside the heavy and difficult environment, I think that's beside all the trees which are standing in front of us, we still have to see the forest, which is still quite green. Cotton continues to set the price point for all fibers, but other influences gain importance. I think that's admittedly something even I have to admit. In a low pricing environment, cotton definitely has a much stronger, or is reflecting a much stronger pricing point, an indication, price indication, as it compared to 2011 or 2010, it was the case. The big question is what will happen as a consequence with the high cotton stock? You know that stocks have actually increased further. The cotton industry is now in its third season of production, surplus, which means higher harvest than the consumption, even if the consumption is quite good this year, but also the harvest is quite good, and we are approaching or have already touched the 75% stock-to-use ratio. Let's have a look at the main meat cellulosic fibers. Viscose prices are more affected by additional distortions, which is primarily driven by the Chinese viscose spot price, which is stable, but on a very, very low level. If we talk about the price of 13,200 renminbi, which is almost up and down by 100 renminbi for one quarter, but it is the lowest price since years. So let's move on then to slide 5, where we talk about short-term pain and long-term gain. I start with a long-term perspective. Nothing has changed on that. Of course, we cannot tell you when we will see the cellulose gap, volume-wise, and maybe also having a positive effect on Lansing, but it is going to come. All the things which are influencing urbanization, climate change, sustainability, water consumption is still on. And if you look on the right side of the chart, you see that we tried. It's a best try to make such a industry curve. On U.S. and China, we are pretty sure because we have pretty good information, and I think it's most important that the two biggest out of three cotton-producing countries have high cost. For instance, China is subsidizing its cotton industry by $6 billion, and we also know from the U.S., depending on how and which source you take, also between $2 and $4 billion. That's significant figures. And if we look on the short term, I think the most pressing issue is that ceteris paribus supply as it is now, and with a little bit higher consumption, it may take 1.5 to 2.5 years to bring it down to a normal level of, let's say, 50 or 55%. I think very important is to see a breakage in the trend down from the 75 towards the 60. The trend towards higher cotton prices, as I mentioned, is a very, very clear trend. You may not see that if you look on 12 months or 24 months, but if you put a trend line into, let's say, 2000 to 2012, you see a surprisingly strong increase in cotton price, which is reflected by that what I mentioned before on the cotton cost, by higher fertilizer cost, by higher harvesting cost, higher personal cost, rising land cost, and. So let's move now to slide 6. What's the consequence out of that? The consequence out of not so good macro picture, the consequence out of a quite distorted fiber environment. We clearly have to adjust our short-term CapEx plans, and we have to also recalibrate a little bit our strategy. So that means we are scrutinizing all our investments, particularly on the visco side. If we are not able to make attractive margins, we are not going to invest. And I think this is in line with your expectations that not next year we would tell you, well, we haven't spent another 350 million, but we don't make much profit on that. Of course, that does not mean that we would hold on our current tensile expansion in Lansing. It's fully under construction, and we are in time and on budget. But we are reprioritizing our current projects, and that will focus on projects with productivity and efficiency improvements, generating also more and more positive scaling effects. Let me also underline that Lenzing is very strong and very comfortable with self-financing of projects with self-financing capability. On the one side, self-financing of substitution and maintenance CapEx to the tune of €100 million per annum, and of course, what we promised in May, a minimum dividend of €1.75 per share. Taxes we have to pay because we make quite good profit, and interest payments. So that's another €100 million. And whatever then needs to make necessary a minimum investments on capacities, we have to extract of excellence program. Thomas will work out. In 2013, we are harvesting already quite good on the low-hanging fruits. Of course, understandably, the process and structural improvements will take longer and may also, case by case, lead to some capex and investments. Let me move on, and I have to emphasize very clearly: where there is a shadow, there is also a light. And that you see quite good on the next page. We are still a growth story. Of course, we may take out a little bit of risk on growth in Asia and take out a little bit leverage on viscose investments. But I think that just improves the quality of the growth and the quality of the earnings. Man-made cellulosic fibers are still a compelling growth story, as you can see on this slide. The megatrends are all intact. The global fiber growth is driven by population growth, don't want to repeat, prosperity, consumers realizing sustainability issues all over the world. There are a lot of market opportunities for MMCs because there are, and not to repeat again, environmental issues, operational issues, why MMC, why viscose, why modal, and particularly tensile has advantages over cotton. What's most important is, and I don't want to pick around on the 36% share of cellulosics as part of the total fiber, but it's quite important that we are continuing on this 36%. 35-37% as also for the next couple of years until 2020, that not synthetics are gaining share. The MMC share is going to increase by 2020, not only because of Lenzing intelligence, but also because of other client surveys and customer talking to us what they are going to invest due to structural, very structural limitations in cotton supply. And the cellulosic growth is still overproportionally high for viscose. And to summarize the first part and to emphasize again, we see long-term growth and therefore long-term gain. However, as we are an industry with 4.5 million capacity against 27 million tons on cotton and 60% on synthetics, MMC but primarily viscose is quite sensitive to small changes in cotton, and of course also sensitive to small price changes or volume changes in synthetics. But even our cautious scenarios, growth scenarios, are in a range of 3% in the worst case, which is almost similar to 3.5% of the total base case growth for fibers, and 13% in the best case. So we expect there is a 9% average market growth, which is three times the average global fiber growth. That's not bad. Fritz, I want to hand over to Fritz to elaborate a little bit on the future potentials for the lending markets.
Thank you, Peter. Good afternoon to ladies and gentlemen. Fritz Wenninger speaking. We are now on page 8, and as Peter mentioned, the megatrends are still intact and support the man-made cellulosic growth. Lenzing, being the only one producer who is positioned in all three generations of man-made cellulosic fibers. And I just want to give you a short clip on what is the situation right now in the different segments. Let's start first with the viscose. Viscose has a dynamic right now, which is getting into a commodity fiber, and it's very much driven out of China. What is it? Commoditizing means that a lack of differentiation is developing, and the other thing is continuously driven by a certain overcapacity, which is putting pressure on price. But nevertheless, if we see the long-term perspective on the viscose fibers, it's growing a lot in absolute terms, and we are adding into the year 2020 another roughly 4.6 million tons, and this is finally then a consumption of over 8 million tons. Going to Modal, our specialty fiber. This is a niche product, and we developed that niche product since 40 years, in certain selected textile applications. And they are mainly underwear applications, where it's highly liked by consumers, and of course, then finally also by the textile value chain. And this is also manifested if you see just the premium over viscose. When we see the quarter two, or even quarter one, where we have a premium over viscose of about 55% from the Modal. But we cannot expand so much anymore the Modal in terms of further expansion, as this production is very capital intensive, and due to lower run rate, we can just produce 50% of the viscose output, it's somehow also limited. So in a nutshell, long-term perspective on Modal, even with competition coming on stream, being it out of India, being it out of Taiwan to a certain part, we will have to differentiate ourselves and make Modal even more luxurious and more luxurious. But there is no big capacity expansion. In Tencel, this is, of course, the third generation of fibers and giving our strongest potential. Why? Because this fiber generation has the most outstanding product characteristics and therefore can really access into broad range applications, which mainly driven by cotton. For instance, this is multi-million tons businesses, denim, home textiles or shirts, or even into some other technical applications. Lenzing there will move benefit from a first mover advantage and will build the market. Long-term perspective of Dental, a strong growth potential. We estimate about 400,000 tons more compared to today until 2020, which means about a growth rate of 15% per annum. And not to forget, please, besides the product characteristic, also the production technology is coming more and more evident, which is environmentally friendly and has their big advantages even compared to viscose fibers. Now let's move to page 9. What does this mean as a consequence, and how we will follow the differentiated strategies? On viscose, of course, it is a commoditizing segment, but still there is some room for differentiation, and we have to find this room, and we have to elaborate this room and be innovative there. And just as a number, today we sell the viscose fiber in China at a 3 to 5% higher price than the rest of the Chinese producers. But what is the most relevant thing in a commoditizing business is you have to have the cost leadership. And this is the key element for success in the future, even more than today, and not to forget, of course, the quality leadership. What is going on in Modal? It is a niche strategy. We'll continue to develop that niche strategy, a very high premium price strategy in selected textile applications. We have to further differentiate to, through other product ranges, for instance, micromodal, promodal, modal color, etc., etc. Now coming to the most promising segment, as I told you, where we build a lot of our efforts right now, and this is Tencel. And Tencel, there we run a scale strategy, an expansion strategy. We have to foster really growth in the segments, nonwovens, textiles, technical applications. And we are pretty, pretty clear on that. We will have a benefit from the first mover advantage in two ways, as we build already now a big capacity with 67 tons in the site in Lansing. We are far down the learning curve than anybody else who coming on stream. And we will have also the learning curve, so to say, on the market access, on the market penetration, on the different applications. Of course, I also would like to mention here, with the volume expansion, there is also a certain price-volume elasticity. And so this will have some reduced prices in the future connected to the volumes. Now let's move to page number 10. It's very shortly summarized how we implement the strategic imperative, so to say. Clear. Customer is the number one, it is the center of all our activities, but not only the primary customers who is paying the money, also the whole supply chain down to the retailer. Second point, focus on Asia. Just as a number, more than 50% of the spinning capacity in textiles is in China. We have to be even more closer and faster even on these big markets in Asia. Also developing there the whole supply chain, also developing the retail, the local retail, for instance, in China. Third focus, Tencel. This specialty product with all the benefits, the product characteristics, needs a very special attention to do this big scaling strategy. Fourth focus point, innovation and applications. This is anyhow more or less connected to the DNA of Lansing, but it's not for our side that we just have innovative products. It is a differentiation tool for the whole supply chain, for all our customers on the supply chain. And last but not least, of course, the fifth focus point is to go for a profitable growth. We will not go for just market share without profitability. This is not our way forward. We want to have, let's say, a qualitative profitable growth on the different product, because we have, of course, profitability also for the shareholders. Thank you. Maybe I would like to hand over now to Thomas.
Thank you, Fritz. Good afternoon or good morning to those who listen in from the US. Before returning to Q2, let me summarize the consequences of what has just been said on strategy in financial terms. When Peter mentioned we are not going to spend more than we earn going forward, it says nothing else but net debt will be frozen at year-end 2013 levels. Secondly, flexibility on future investments sets the minimum cash-generating requirement at 200 million euros, 100 million maintenance capex, 100 million interest, taxes, and dividends. And third, any cash being generated over and above will be clearly prioritized on the basis of our adjusted strategy, which means Tencel first, and strict financial return criteria, and the assumption of no change in the short and medium-term pricing environment. Now, going to slide 11, it sets the starting base for all of this with a net debt of 424 million euros by 30th of June, only 11 million above end of March due to sales proceeds of plastics, more than offsetting the dividend cash out. A word on the cash tax payments so far this year. They are adding up to almost 47 million euro, and approximately another 15 to 20 million euro are coming in the second half of this year. If you want, you could say that we are paying 2 years of Austrian taxes in cash in 2013. The reason for this is that all losses carried forward in the tax group with BNC have been used up, which does not only mean a full cash out for last year's taxes in Austria, which we are regularly paying in the following year, but also the requirement to make advance payments for the current year. Again, I'm talking about cash taxes, which are very different this year compared with our booked taxes in the P&L. The booked taxes are 25 million versus 45 million in cash. Interest of 5 million euro represents the quarterly run rate and points to another 10 million payable in H2. The reason for the comparatively low net interest lies in the continuous effort to reduce our bank debt, which is also shown on slide 11, and the generally very low interest environment. The reduction of bank debt, of course, goes against the liquidity, for which we hardly earn any interest at the moment. It represents not only a contribution to excellence on the cash side, but also no problem, as our outline strategy also protects our shadow investment grade rating and makes refinancing a no issue. Of course, our 45% equity ratio and a net gearing well below 40% add to the solid financial position. Talking about excellence, slide 12 outlines the sustainability of our Q1 run rate when we saved 5 million against Q4 through first measures, and it details the additional 6 million euro, 6 million, which we were able to generate in cost savings in the second quarter. Roughly half of it, or 3 million, are coming from a plethora of purchasing initiatives with our suppliers and some minor improvements in raw material costs over Q1, particularly caustic soda in Indonesia. That's making a million out of the 3. The other 3 million are coming from reduced spendings on maintenance and other initiatives like travel expenses or reductions in marketing and sales. The 6 million euro of excellence savings go directly to the EBITDA line, as the 2 cents lower average fiber price in Q2 versus Q1 is almost offset by the contribution margin of the additional 6,000 tons sales volume in Q2. The improvement in EBITDA before plastics, of course, in Q2 versus Q1 represents almost exactly the incremental savings by excellence, 5.9 million versus 6 million. As has been presented in the past, excellence is a three-dimensional program directed not only to improve cost and top line, but also adjust capex to cash flow from operations. Looking at the first half capex, there's no big difference with the first half year of 2012. Still, we feel comfortable that all initiated measures will lead to full year capex not higher than 260 million euro. Compared with the 2012 capex of 346 million, or without the acquisition of the remaining 25% of Pasco's 320 million. As I have mentioned at the beginning, allowing for some lead time, we are perfectly able to manage our capex level flexibly and according to cash inflows. In summary, the ramp up of our excellence program is on track to deliver the necessary results for reaching the H2 savings required for our guided profitability. Which brings me to the end of our presentation, the outlook for the full year. The outlook now includes the net effect of the plastics transaction. Given the difficult environment, the most important message is that we stay within the originally stated range of profitability. 280 million euro of EBITDA is even slightly above the midpoint of our original guidance. However, it also includes a net 20 million EBITDA effect of the sale of 85% of plastics. However, even without this net effect, EBITDA would be at 260 million or the low end of the old guidance, which you see next on the slide. This is in so far remarkable as the average fiber price of €1.72 per kilo for the full year implies an average fiber price in the second half of €1.70, or 6 cents less than in H1. These minus 6 cents represent 26 to 27 million euro and fall straight through to the EBITDA line. Based on guidance, EBITDA in H2 is 10 million euro below H1, of course, again, without plastics. So 125 million compared with 135 million in the first half. Contribution margin of 30,000 tons more fiber, or roughly 50 million euros in sales, is around 15 million euro. The 30,000 tons of additional fibers result from roughly 440,000 tons in H1, which give you 470,000 tons in the second half to reach a full year volume of 910,000 tons. Of course, this volume can only be sold if it has been produced before on an uninterrupted production-based assumption. With sales of 990 million in the first half and 60 million less in the second half from deconsolidating plastics, plus the mentioned 50 million from the higher second half volume, the full year top line is going to be just below 2 billion euro, everything else being equal. Finally, the book's tax rate is driven up by 8 million due to taxes payable for the plastics transaction. Rather than confusing you completely with the fact that the tax effect on the cash flow is only coming through next year, I thank you for your attention and would like to open the line for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time we will begin the question and answer session. Please, two questions per person so that everyone has a chance to ask a question. Should there be time left, we can start a second Q&A session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. And anyone who has a question may press star and 1 at this time. And the first question is from Matthias Pfeifenberger of Deutsche Bank.
Yes, good afternoon, Stephanie. Chance, two questions from my side. Firstly, what do you see in terms of actual pricing? You mentioned Chinese viscose staple fiber is flat. Still, you're guiding for 170. And a question related to that, are you already working on further price decreases? And if so, where? And the second question is, the dividend stays stable at 175. The EPS will approximately halve. I just want to get a feel of what the dynamic is, who basically has favored a stable dividend. Was it management? What's the main shareholder saying? Because I can recall for another portfolio company of theirs, the dividend in accordance with management was cut to a 30% payout, and this company was net cash. So you are scrutinizing CapEx, you have 400 million net debt, and still the dividend is almost a 50% payout.
Okay, Matthias, on the actual pricing, let's not forget we know June pricing, and I bet that Fritz has something to add to it, but the June pricing was the lowest in the last 4 years, and we just don't believe that this pricing is going to recover. So we might have taken a cautious view of saying the June pricing is setting the price level for the entire second half of the year. Maybe Fritz wants to add to it.
Yeah. Matthias, I mean, yes, we see a average price for the second half of 170 compared to 176 first half. And the reason for that is, and Thomas made the introduction to that, that the June pricing is already in this region. And why is this? Because what I said before, commoditizing viscose fiber, it's mainly from the viscose fiber driven in China. And what we expect is, and this is a bit the further price drop we expecting for the second half, is right now the fiber price follows the pulp price. And as this is a major raw material, of course, this is then finally managed through to the customer. And we see still some room for pulp to go down within the next months to come. And this is why we are cautious on the viscose pricing for the second half.
And so it will be mainly viscose and maybe tensile following suit and modal rather flattish. Is that a good way to think about it?
Modal rather flattish and viscose, of course, finally, as you know, meantime, at the end of the day, the whole band is moving in this way. We just can talk about premiums to viscose, but we see it mainly modal flattish and dental still a bit further down because we also do preparation work for the next year's plant coming up on stream, and so we have some let's say segments to penetrate.
Dividend policy. As you know, all a board can do is suggest a dividend, and then the AGM has to say that's the dividend we want. We have at the very early stage said we need to make up for the high volatility that you're exposed to, not only in our share, but we are exposed to in our market environment. And we felt that a shareholder return through dividend, with a minimum dividend being set at 175, is presenting a fair equilibrium, which is the wrong word, but I think you know what I mean. Nobody really has kind of questioned it. I hear where you're coming from, but we feel that as you have presented us as a very continuous cash generator, we should not now change strategy on the dividend side, which, of course, is the management thinking, and it is going to be decided by the shareholders, including the core shareholder in the AGM.
Okay, thanks.
And the next question is from Stefan Trubrich of Kepler Cheuvreux.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Good afternoon, Stephanie. My first question is on the supply-demand situation in China. Maybe you could share with us how the situation develops currently, as indicated in your presentation slide pack. In China, or in the industry, there is currently 75% utilization rate. What do you expect? How are your peers behaving in terms of capacities? As you say, okay, they are desperate for cash, and it still seems that they are producing as otherwise prices would recover. How would you judge the situation over the next couple of quarters ahead? And related to that, with the MMC growth scenario you outlined, where you see 3 to 13% growth potential per anno, I assume this is demand growth. What would be the underlying assumptions here, just to give us for the 3%, maybe a midpoint for the 7%, and then for 13%? Thank you.
Yeah, Peter answering the question, the supply demand on the viscose. We see still capacity coming on stream to the tune of, let's say, 400,000 or 500,000 tons until the end of the year, maybe beginning of next year. That's of course much more than the Chinese viscose market is growing this year. So, and as I mentioned already today morning at the press conference, Chinese financing is a very short time financing, and when this prices, when this volumes come on stream, and these guys need cash to repay or to pay for the interest, which is in China still quite high, 8% on the shadow market up to 12-14%. So let's say average 10%. That's a lot of money you need, and you also have to pay to repay or start repaying a little bit principal. So we have seen in the last actually 8 months several of these guys just stopping construction, then going on after one quarter, or delaying the startup. Yeah, but if they come into the production and if they have to repay, then they have to deliver, and then they just sell at marginal prices. So this is the issue why for the time being, and that's definitely also for the rest of the year, Stefan, that we will not only see price increases, we have to expect actually lower prices. On the demand supply side, taking out 2013 or put aside, let's say on 2014, 2015, normally a market in China with approaching 3 million tons should have a growth rate of 10-12%, so that's 300,000 tons. From that perspective, the supply is going to level out. We see still some capacities. There are, but the announcements of further increases, of further capacity increases, of further investments are very small. Because who wants to invest in an industry where we say that most of these Chinese guys don't make money? They're still moving into real estate, viscose companies moving into real estate and investing there. Yeah. So I'm not saying this is we see a strong improvement in structural supply demand dynamics, but I would say not that many entrants are getting into the market. No? And that's, that could be quite positive for, I would say, 2015, in line also with the somewhat lower copper stock.
So do you see a consolidation wave coming up, or when will they exit? They will make some cash, otherwise they wouldn't be able to produce anymore, so they're still able to service the debt, right?
Hello. Listen, when I say that these guys sometimes are coming from the chemical side or coming or moving into the real estate side, they make money either on the chemical side or on the real estate. Of course, there are also examples like Shandong Helong, which failed because they also didn't make money on the real estate. If we talk about consolidation, dead guys always need a long time to really die, particularly not only in China, not only in Europe, but particularly in China. So we are not expecting that companies who produce 100,000 tons are going to disappear. No, they may be taken over if it is within governmental companies by another governmental owned companies, a company. Of course, we also have seen some consultancy paper showing that 200,000-400,000 tons of old technology of environmental sensitive capacity may move out of the market. That could really be, but that is all already accounted into the issues I mentioned.
Okay, and I mean then when in according to your forecasts with capacities, or I mean it's tough to guess, but when would you say have you reached this point when finally this how you call it, cellulose gap, or we have a fiber equilibrium in the market.
Yeah, I would say, as it is mentioned on the cotton, that could take 1.5 to 2.5 years.
Okay, thanks. And the second question is on the financials. The development in the cost of materials. I can understand how the pulp cost, chemicals, and energy prices developed. However, in other, I find the fluctuation from 2012 to 2013 kind of extreme. What is here a sustainable level as this delta of around about 60 million euros in H1 gives me the impression that it's kind of a lot. So what is sustainable here? Is it then 330 by year end, and how will this develop in 2014 and 15? Thank you.
Interesting way of counting questions, by the way, Stefan. Just really quick, I think the answer lies in the footnote of page 23, where you have this other position in cost of material. It is the trading goods that is our kilo fiber. Of course, as the fiber goes down altogether, the kilo fiber is decreasing in cost. We have packaging and auxiliary material. It is a function of, you know, us negotiating with our suppliers on the one hand in under excellence, and the higher volume, of course, that makes it there. I'm afraid with the other positions, it's always the same. They are pretty unpredictable. If you look at the absolute number, okay, it might be somewhat more explainable. But over the quarters, you will see volatility also going forward.
So we can't say, well, it's then 330 by year end, and then potentially rising by, I don't know, 3 to 5% annually.
No, doesn't work like this, because as I said, it's a plethora of positions that often have diverting trends, and that makes it a bit difficult not only to explain but for you also to forecast in percentage terms. In absolute numbers, I think it is an acceptable one.
Well, because just to understand me, I mean, we have a H1 EBIT of before restructuring of 78 or 79 million euros, and then we have this fluctuation in within cost of materials of 60 million euros. I mean, that's and if we then have every quarter up and down 20 to 30 million, I mean, it's very, very hard to track this performance then.
And I understand, and again, apologies for this. It wouldn't be another position if it were, you know, consisting of any major factors. But if you look at it, it's going to be again influenced a little bit also by the business unit plastics, which is not there anymore. It's the Kelheim, it's the wood. Of course, that is going at stages two different directions. It's the BU engineering. And it's Paskov and other raw materials. I can't give you any better answer or any more confidence. I know how you're struggling in predicting it. The trouble is more that what you're comparing it with, i.e. the EBITDA, is shrinking.
Okay, thanks.
Next question is from Fabio Lopez of Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the question. I have two questions. One is the excellence program. What is the potential for cost savings going forward? It's been helping, obviously, the EBITDA guidance for the full year. And what do you expect in terms of retention long-term? 2014, what would be the retention rate? And the second question is on CapEx. You kept the 260 million guidance for this year, but how should we be thinking about CapEx in 2014 and 15? How does it compare to the initial plan? And the because if my calculations are right, your utilization rate in viscose is running close to 100%. So whereas in the market it's 75%. So the market is still growing, so your market share will be diluted. Are you okay? Is that a problem, and how should we be thinking about that? Thanks.
Excellent questions for the excellence program. We are comfortable to say that the run rate, the Q2 run rate, is also the run rate that we need for H2, okay? Because basically, when you work it out and look at the second half being 10 million lower than the first half, okay, and the contribution margin of the additional volume minus the 6 cents, you easily arrive at the difference really coming from plastics. So an 11 million run rate also for Q3 and Q4 is what we're seeing. Going beyond, I don't answer it as a CFO because I need to have the programs in place. We've told you these are the low-hanging fruits. The structural programs are going to deliver on a more sustainable basis because obviously saving in maintenance OPEX is not sustainable. You can do that for 1 or 1.5 years, but not forever. On the other hand, we haven't even touched on process improvement and the like because they need, on the one hand, upfront investment. On the other hand, they deliver over time substantial monies, which I'm not prepared to put a figure on. On the CapEx, we have limited ourselves this year to 260 million. And we said next year, the CapEx is 100 million plus whatever we are able to generate in whatever environment we find. And I think this is the important and strong message because we are saying we are not spending more, okay, than we are earning. And the minimum CapEx that we have to spend is 100 million. So next year, of course, you still have end effect of the Tensor plant, which is going to be finished by mid-year, and of a couple of other projects, so it's not going to be 100 million, but it could be anything at 100 plus the spillover effect if you want. The rest is really determined by the visibility and the profitability of this visibility that we have. We are not prepared to start spending money on the basis of any expectation of improved profitability. And the final question on the 100% utilization rate, a technical one, and then I hand over to Fritz. Technically, you must be a bit careful because on the sales numbers, we always include approximately 40,000 tons of Kelheim trading goods because we are selling them. Okay. When you then compare the sales and the capacity does not include Kelheim. But you're right, and that is what we've continuously said and what we continuously prove. We run at 95% plus utilization rate. And, of course, summing this all up, it means that we are prepared to lose market share going forward if others just invest for changing money. But I think here Fritz is the more proper person to answer.
Of course, Fabio, we make this analysis, what has happened, what is going on to be. If we lose, for instance, 1% market share, for instance, 2% market share, because we running at 95% and the other ones going up from 67 maybe to 75% utilization rate or even higher. Point is that, and I talked this before, we want to have a qualitative growth and a profitable growth. And our main target is that we have customers which are using all our fibers. This is the ultimo. And we have still 38% of just viscose customers. And it's just viscose customers we can divide into ABC customers. And of course, the viscose business is generally not so profitable right now and will not be, as Peter mentioned, in the next 1.5 years. So we can easily cut out volume there or lose market share without, let's say, penalizing profits.
Okay, just to clarify the excellence run rate, how much you did 6 million in Q2 versus Q1, 6 million additional, right?
Yeah, additional. So it's an easy one. What I said is 5, 11, which is 5 plus 6, and then Q3 and Q4 would be 11 and 11.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Next question is from Bernhard Zehlinger from RCB.
Gentlemen, a lot has already been answered. One left, if I may. You mentioned the potential scaling back of CapEx and focus on specialty fibers, mainly TENCEL. Is that somewhat telling us that potentially in 2015, and some of that has already been delayed by a year or so, the viscose capacity expansion programs we see, for example, in China or the greenfield in India are currently being questioned?
Not to be questioned, but as Thomas mentioned, we are reprioritizing our investments, and for sure we can tell you that next year we have a capacity of 1 million, maybe not yet sales of 1 million, but close to, and also there will be some more capacity in 2015, but maybe on a lower side. If you talk about India, India is still a very strategic project. It's still a wide place where we are. Of course, we sell substantial amounts of specialities to India. I cannot say the figure, but it's substantial. But if we cannot make, let's say, an attractive margin, we are not going to invest. Not in 2014 and maybe not in 2015. If the market is going to change a little bit, as Stefan asked before, it could happen. But even if we would invest in India, this capacity would not be available in neither, definitely not in 2014, and also not in 2015. If you look on a long, long term, we know that we produce 1 million next year. We are going to invest, if you just take it 250 times 7 years, yeah, you get to a substantial amount of capex, because we want to grow. Maybe not the 13% or the 12%, as I mentioned before, but by improving the growth, the quality of growth, and by improving the quality of earnings, it means also a little bit less aggressive growth on viscose. Modal, Fritz mentioned, it's more capital intensive and high production cost, but therefore we put more money, more emphasis, more marketing, more effort, and more resources on TENCEL.
Understood. Thank you.
Next question is from Peter McKay of Morgan Stanley.
Good afternoon, everybody. I've got a couple of questions, if I can, please. First, on Fritz, you mentioned that you saw the potential for further price declines in viscose to reflect the risk of further pulp declines. Obviously, you're thinking there about DWP. I wonder what is there that you can do or have done or will do to help hedge out that risk from on your sappy paper pulp related contracts. Can you do something to help offset the sort of mismatch between paper pulp and DWP? And secondly, Fritz, you were talking about a lack of differentiation sort of developing in the viscose market and talking about commoditizing in viscose. I mean, the viscose market's been pretty commoditized for a long time. Are you trying to suggest that actually the premium price that you're still achieving for viscose in China is you expect to be whittled down further? Thank you.
Coming to the dissolving pulp, and I said before that we are a bit more cautious because we feel that the dissolving pulp price will go down slightly in the next half year, and therefore the fiber will follow. Coming to Sappi, I mean, mismatch. I mean, we still have very good conditions with Sappi, but nevertheless, I mean, we are renegotiating also to some extent contracts. We have, of course, because of certain discussions going on, because of anti-dumping duty being set in China on dissolving pulp, there are arising also certain potentials which we can use in order to improve our, let's say, pulp cost situation. More I would not like to say because this is very, really confidential, but these are instruments, elements, which can be played in a company like Lansing, where we can have, let's say, multiple shifts of pulp to certain production units, being in Indonesia, and can avoid certain anti-dumping regulations. To viscose, yeah, you're right. I mean, viscose was quite a long time always, of course, seen as a commodity. Still, the competition and the is picking up, and the pressure on price is more intense than I would say ever. But the main target is to keep a premium of 3 to 5%, which we do have right now, and this is still a challenge. But still, we will have a premium. We're working hard there now in introducing even finer fibers. Peter, you know, you are a textilist more or less, but we're going down below 1.3 DTEX fibers, and so. But this is, of course, to very fine yarn spinners, for instance. So we do a lot of exercise here to maintain, to keep our price premium of about 3 to 5% on the Chinese market.
Okay, thank you.
Some more questions?
Yes.
The next question is from Adrian Duvat from Odin. Please go ahead.
Hello, guys. My questions has really been answered both on CapEx and on cost cutting. Perhaps just a follow up. On cost cutting, you're doing quite a strong performance there. And did I understand it right that you will cut another 11 million for both 3Q and 4Q? And the other question on CapEx, if the operating environment is the same at year end as you see today, is it fair to assume between 100 and 150 million in CapEx for 2014? Thank you.
Adrian, really quick, cost cutting, yes, you've understood that right. We think that the run rate of 11 million of Q2 is going to continue into Q3 and Q4. On the CapEx, more complex, the answer was we could cut it back in an ideal year, which is not the year 2014, without any spillover effects from projects that we finish, down to 100 million. That doesn't mean that 2014 is 100 million, but it could be as low as 100 million plus whatever is left of Tensor, which I do not want to put a number on because it depends, of course, of the progress that we make in the construction work. And the rest is purely determined by our ability to generate free operating cash flow, i.e. cash flow after interest and taxes.
Okay.
Next question is from John Klein of Berenberg.
Yeah, hi there, good afternoon, and thanks for taking my questions. I've got two of them. both relating to cost and both I want to relate on a per kilo of production basis, if you so want. First one would be for wood pulp. The market price for wood pulp is actually nearing your cost per kilo of production in wood pulp. We are a market price of around 70 euro cents, I think. And if I divide your dissolving wood pulp cost by the amount of production, I'm getting like 62 cents per kilo. So the gap has narrowed very much. Could we think of like the 60, 62 cents or so that you are having as a floor in the for the market price? Would be my first question. And the second question would be on key chemicals. That's been a major cost driver in 2012. But again, if I look at it on a per kilo basis, the relative cost of that has actually come down over the last two quarters. With the added tensile capacity in 2014, which, correct me if I'm wrong, requires less chemicals, how do you think that cost item will develop next year? Thank you.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. The gap has narrowed. We always try to give you as good information as we can and are allowed to. If you have a look at slide 44, you will see, based on today's spot market price of $885, okay, where we stand with the production costs in Lenzing, okay, in Lenzing. And then the production costs in Paskov, of course, are still a bit disturbed by the conversion costs and no full production as yet, and instead of beech, spruce wood prices. But they are somewhere in between the spot market price and the Lenzing site price. And the same is true for the Sappi price. Of course, the big advantage that we have, and if you take the median between 100% and 50%, okay, which at some stage was the case, it is much better than it is right now. On the key chemicals, I'm not sure if I could follow you on the development of the key chemical cost. The key chemicals for us, okay, and don't forget we are the 800-pound gorilla, so not necessarily world market prices are the perfect directive, but in the key chemicals, with the exception of caustic soda in Indonesia, which was favorable, they were pretty much the same Q1 against Q2. You are absolutely right that chemical costs as a percentage of our total costs with tensile cutting in are getting somewhat diluted because we change part, and I stress part of the chemical costs, to energy costs. As the only chemical that is needed for the production of tensile is NMMO. I never say that correct, and it's recovered to more than 99%. So you're right, the energy costs, which are well under control, are going to be affected. When you look at the absolute number, because Peter is helping me here, when you, of course, look at the absolute cost, it's also a question of quantity. And when you look at the percentage of total costs, don't forget that the chemicals are unfortunately not behaving like dissolving wood pulp, which is going up and down with a delay effect with our fiber price.
Okay, perfect. Thanks very much. And maybe as a follow-up to the first question, could there be a theoretical situation where the wood pulp price, because of such a an influx of new capacity, could actually fall below your own cost, the spot market price, I mean?
Theoretically, everything is possible, but it's not likely because if you, as Thomas mentioned on page 43, you see that this is a euro price of 500 euro per ton. Yeah, I would say this is outstanding for a European producer. We have so many integration advantages on energy, on fire products, and. Yeah, but if you would assume that, a lot of others on the right side of the industry curve would have to shut down first before it would really squeeze Lenzing. No Chinese producer would be in a position to produce, and then the whole Chinese viscose industry would come down with very negative effects.
Peter, let me add also to this, because I think John's question was not only for the Lenzing side, but also for the Sappi contract. In the Sappi contract, of course, you could also see a theoretical chance, and I wouldn't even say only a theoretical one, that the pulp, the dissolving wood pulp spot market price drops below our price. How would that work? It would mean that the paper pulp price is above the dissolving wood pulp price. That's very unusual, because the dissolving wood pulp is 25 to 30% less yield than the paper pulp, but it could happen, because again, dissolving wood pulp is a function of demand and supply, and we are seeing a number of new capacities that came online, and of course, on stream, sorry, and of course, these capacities have calculated some startup losses to gain market share, and they are not happily, but they are prepared to incur these startup losses. Overall, we feel, and that is why we've chosen this price mechanism, pretty comfortable with the price mechanism in a not all too distorted market.
Very clear. Thanks very much.
Next questioner is Matthias Pfeifenberger from Deutsche Bank. In the interest of time, please limit yourself to two questions only, please.
Maybe back to the excellent savings, Thomas, because there was a mistake also in the morning, I guess. Reuters headlined you had a total of 16 million of savings. I guess it's 11 million as you outlined, and you're mentioning 11 million run rates for Q3 and Q4. So what's the total savings contribution? Is it 33 or 11, and this run rate remains for Q3 and Q4?
Both are right. The press looks always at half year, okay? So we always give to the press any number on a half year basis. So it's 5 million from the first quarter plus 11 million from the second quarter, giving you 16 million, okay? You add to these 16 million, 22 million from Q3 and Q4, and you're pretty much where we are heading for and are confident to be able to deliver.
But 6 million, I mean, it's only the incremental savings that count in terms of what we have to model in terms of total savings contribution, right? So what's the total full year effect from excellence?
I'm not sure. Well,
because,
it depends
because,
also on what
because,
you...
because your point of thinking is the 5 million realized, of course, stay for the second quarter,
okay.
Right?
It depends on what you're on what basis you're modeling, but now I got you. If you say your basis is the actual first half, okay, which has an average, and now I'm really confusing hopefully everyone, an average savings rate of 8 million, which is 5 plus 11, i.e. 16 divided by 2, okay? So if you say the 8 million is already included, and you ask me what do I need for Q3 and Q4 on top, okay, the answer is another 6 million for the second half year, okay? Which is the average of 8 million, okay? You say that's ticked off, because you've got that, and then I need another 3 million quarterly or 6 million for the half year to get to our guidance level.
Okay, when the earnings are 100, what is it going to be after excellence in end of this year?
I'm not sure.
What is the earnings improvement?
The earnings improvement on a full year basis, okay, would be 38, and the earnings improvement over H1 would be 6.
38, you mentioned for the full
year. For a full year, which is nothing else but 5, okay, plus 11, plus 22, I hope that I didn't.
So roughly 20 million will be realized in this year, and there will be a spillover of the same magnitude for next year.
Now I'm not able to follow you, because the way we produce it is we always compare it to the previous quarter actual, because otherwise I would have had to give you my budget or my assumptions or whatever. So we always compare it to the actual of the previous quarter.
Okay, but the 38 will only be realized in the course of the year, right?
Yes.
So only half of that will impact 2013.
That's not kind of, you know, that is what we actually and really realized in a ramp up curve. It's actually, I thought, but I realize now it hasn't been good enough. If you look at slide 12 that I've explained, you see what it is. You have a 5 million column of savings compared to Q4. You have an 11 million, which consists of the 5 million Q2 plus 3 or 6 in Q2, which is 11. And if you would extend that one, it would say 11 in Q3 and 11 in Q4.
Yeah, so that's, I don't know, 33 in my view, but I mean,
maybe 38 Matthias. And theoretically, if you calculate that on theoretically, you would have another 38 in next year. Ceteris paribus.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
The next question is from Stefan Trubrich of Kepler Cheuvreux. In the interest of time, please limit yourself to 2 questions only.
So one follow-up that's on the future potential of Tencel, where you describe in your long-term perspective that you see an incremental growth potential of up to 400,000 tons until 2020. Considering that you are at the moment the one and only producer that is able to produce Tencel on an industrial scale, I mean, that implies to me that you already think about setting up a new Tencel facility, or are you already aware of that there are some other players in the industry that caught up and might have plans to do so? And thinking about the current 155,000 tons of Tencel and with the additional 65,000 tons next year, do you believe, is there already the market for this quantity of Tencel fiber, and how would you see the price develop? Because in Q2 the Tencel price stayed rather stable. Where would you see the price go in absolute terms in order to place this kind of volume? Thank you.
Yeah, Stefan, you're right. We expect a growth potential, which is Lansing growth potential of 400,000 tons. If you take the 150 capacity we have right now plus the 65, you're at 215,000. Yes, 220 is another 6 years from now. You remember when 1 year ago we published Tencel project, there was one project in the US, there was another project, again, a water line in Lansing. That have been 3 projects, so this would be in total about 200,000 tons, and now we have added, in order to get to this 400,000 tons, another line. Wherever it will be put up, we don't know yet, but that's the only difference. The market, with having 99% market share, you take it this Lansing for the time being.
Of course, there are still some activities going on in this very interesting Tencel field, not only from Lansing, but so far we are talking just on one plant in China, which is 15,000 tons, so really nothing, so to say, and this startup is postponed and postponed and postponed, and the other things we are talking just pilot plants level. Of course, I mean, as we are, we cannot, substitute a dental market, because with 99% market share, it's no substitution possible from our side. So we have to make the market. And there is, of course, a certain price reduction in the premium to be seen compared to viscose, that's clear. But I also want to mention in this auditorium right now that we also will have a cost benefit compared to viscose fibers with the new dental technology.
As you save in the cost savings from fewer chemicals is larger than the incremental energy you need.
Exactly.
Okay. And with Modal, I mean, if as it looks in Q2, you were very successful in selling Modal as you sold a new record volume. Why the decision not to add further capacity as the price also seems kind of stable and it's a 50% premium above viscose at the moment. Of course, it's 50% lower output, but the margin is higher and you already have the knowledge, you have the customers. Why don't you further increase your capacities there?
Yeah, we had in Q2 29,000 ton sales in Modal, which is really absolute record, goes beyond our capacity. We could still delete some stocks. Point is, what I said before, the investment costs for further expansion into Modal are extremely high. They are more than double than compared to any viscose. And, of course, it's not just, I'd say the run rate is 50%. It's also we need certain chemical and modifier there. So all in all, adding that up, even if you have the good margin, but the good premium, but still the profitability margin, is getting under stress. Yeah, and this expansion we analyzed not only in Lansing site, we analyzed that in Indonesia, and we analyzed that also in China, but this is the point. Because of these two parameters, high investment cost plus higher running cost, that this is a niche fiber and we have to, let's say, luxurize all the product portfolio within Modal.
Okay, could you just remind us how much the price would be for 100,000 tons of viscose to build a line?
No, Stefan, there is no money that we put, and there is no 100,000 ton line in viscose.
Or say 80,000.
But the best we are prepared to say publicly, and there we are disclosing a lot, is it costs twice as much as a viscose line,
mm-hmm.
and it runs at 50% of output of a viscose line. And if you do this math, okay, the ROCE requires a very high sustainable premium, and this very high sustainable premium is only going to be achieved if it stays in each product, because otherwise the price volume function is making it unrealistic.
Okay, what would be your minimum return requirements that you
10%.
Okay, all right, thank you very much, gentlemen.
There are no further questions. Please continue with any other points you wish to raise.
No further questions? Okay.
No further questions.
Guys, many thanks for your participation. Very interesting, very, very interesting questions. And thanks a lot. See you in 3 months for the third quarter.
Bye-bye.
Oh, capital market.
And the capital markets there.
You should have got the invitations for the 17th, 18th and 19th September. We have prepared nice weather and very interesting tests and experiments by Fritz.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.